Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and I held a beer once too.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are continuing the Booker Medium-ish list and reading Held by Anne Michaels. And I'm starting with a beer. So in the beginning, they talk a lot about seafaring and sailors dying and shit and washing
sweaters
up ashore. You know, and sweaters, yeah. I mean, I don't even know how hot it was if they were sweating. You know where they probably washed up? On a beach, and maybe even Jones Beach. This is Jones Beach Brewing Company, and it's called Jones Inlet India Pale Ale. And this is a newer brewery that's not far from where I live. And they were having a promotion, so I had to buy some. By law, basically. I mean, practically. It's very good. Very good standard IPA. So, Jimmy, why don't you tell us what you thought? Because I don't think we read the same book.
No, I mean, things did happen, but it was, you had to really hold on.
I want to say this book...
Oh, the title tells you to do that, Jimmy.
Yeah, that's true. Fuck.
Step I want to say this book for the first... This is our fourth Booker book. This one feels like a Booker book.
Oh, yeah. This one
this had big Booker energy.
Of the four we've read, I would be happy with this one. I would be mad if this didn't win and one of the other three did.
Bold. If one of the other three won, yeah, okay.
I don't of the want four this read. To win, but it does feel like Booker material, though very pretentious.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, well, that's why it should
highlighted
win.
Some of that, yeah. Okay, so, all right. So this book is going to be hard to explain what happens because it jumps around in time so much.
And almost never to the same, never returns to the same characters, or only does a couple of times.
Yes, and the characters are connected, but the stories, each one of their stories is not very connected. So it doesn't have like one big overarching story. It is really just more like vignettes that are connected to each other, kind of like Visit from the Goon Squad.
I was just going to say that, and I was trying to think of a punny name for it, and I was, give me a minute.
So this book does not contain a PowerPoint presentation, but it does contain on the first page a bunch of science words. So there's my beer. This is MC squared by Equilibrium, which I happen to have in the fridge. And I'm like, oh, sweet. It's good enough.
It also ends, one of the last chapters has a good amount of science. Science comes up a good amount.
It does come up quite a bit. Although, for what purpose?
I have an answer.
Unclear. It's a mystery.
Like science.
That's what Sarah McLachlan, PhD, was building. A mystery of science.
Mm.
So, okay. The book starts off very confusingly. Each chapter, you have to really look at the year because it jumps around a ton. And the first one is 1917. So you immediately think World War I, and you'd be correct because it says France, 1817. Well, this is clearly a World War I book, although only this first section. Anyway, we know life is finite. Why should we believe death lasts forever? And then, so you get these little like these little sections, these little like one sentence things, or with a little star between them. I'm not sure what the purpose of that was. But anyway,
I think it was to distinguish that they are flashbacks or memories during this one intense moment in 1917.
So the first is about this dude named John?
John.
Yep. Yeah, John, who first he's having memories about a girl, the one he's going to marry, who named Helen, but also about almost dying in France, like literally in a shell hole with another dead soldier like just staring at him. And he like either loses his leg or his foot, but actually I don't think he loses all of it. It's just very badly wounded. But it goes back and forth between like memories of sort of like the present and the past, although because his time in war is haunting him. And he talks about meeting Helen and how much he loves her and their little things about their life together. But the very beginning of the book, it's hard to know what's going on. becomes clearer later. But
I understood it that he's in the shell hole or on the battlefield, and he sees this other soldier, and it's kind of like the life flashing before his eyes thing, right? And he's remembering, because he's remembering two different plot lines in the past. He's remembering meeting Helen or Helena, I thought it was at some point, and the time when Helena, he's getting drafted, and she's like, "Let's fucking run. Let's not go to war. Like, let's go. We'll live in a cave and eat lichen." And we'll liken it. And he's like, "That's not how it works." And
she's like, "I will beat you over the head with a frying pan and kidnap you." But yep. She doesn't.
I mean, she's a saucy girl. Like she's you find out more about her backstory a little bit later and then more about her future. So like this first chapter, I was like, okay, I could see where this book might go, maybe. But it's just a guy in the war, and then it like and he's injured. And you'll get the next chapter is 3 years later in the same timeline.
Yeah.
But there's also a weird thing. Was it, I don't know if I'm sure it was chapter one or chapter two about the fucking, you know, New Brunswick sailors. That's the fucking word I'm trying to say. Being identified by their sweaters. I think that was a long thing.
That's in there somewhere.
It was fascinating.
I thought that was his father.
Yeah, it is. It's or is his grandfather. One of his. Somebody in his family had died, and there's this whole explanation of how each town has its own way of weaving a sweater. You know, it's a different knit, different patterns of colors.
Little imperfections, little idiosyncratic ways of doing it.
Well, and they're also there on purpose. It's like when cartographers would put a fake island on a map so they'd know that you plagiarized theirs.
Or a fake word in the dictionary.
Yeah.
That then somebody uses in their book, and then it's no longer a fake word.
What was the word? Doored? Is that the fake one that was in Webster's? Or like accidentally? I don't know. There's a whole thing. So that's fascinating. I don't know if it's true or not.
It is.
I believe it is.
It is true. I mean, it was so that like individual women would knit different things into their husband's sweaters so that if... Because when your body falls over a boat and ends up in the water for a long time, you might come back and be like so messed up no one can tell who you are. But if they're wearing the sweater that identifies them, because they hadn't invented name tags yet, that's how you discovered who this person is.
Yeah, sweaters Hello, are the dog tags of winter.
Yep. And then second chapter is also about John and Helena. And he's back from the war. And his leg is very, it's still attached, but does not work very well, and it's very painful. And he has a photography business. Yeah, so he has a photography business, the one that probably he left. He had to, like, shut down when he went off to the war. Now he's starting it up when he comes back. He has a photography business, but he can't, because of his leg, he can't really do that much. So they hire a dude who is a socialist. And
strike one.
I forget his name. I forget his name, but that it's might not be
Mr. Stewart or something like
his
that.
His real name anyway. But he's like Sawyer? Helps out, but he's yeah, he helps out at the photography business and he's really good at it and stuff like that. Oh, he's really good at lighting, and then suddenly they're taking a picture, and then you know when they're taking all these pictures of wounded veterans and their families and stuff like that, and in one there's the ghostly image of a woman, like they take a picture, like one, a man comes in, he's like, "I need this picture taken." And it's like 1920, and he's like, "It's for my father because I have to move away because I'm getting this thing." So he takes a picture, and then when they develop the picture, there's a ghostly pale image of a woman, and he's like, "Oh my God, it's a miracle! It can't be." At first, like, "No, don't tell anyone. We can't tell anyone." And the guy is like, "No, we can charge a fortune for this. We're going to be rich." And he's like, and John is like, no, we can't do that. We can't take advantage of people. And the guy is like, no, we can make so much money. We can help so many people." Suspicious. And then, but he's also having all these flashbacks of war memories and stuff like that. But then... So then more pictures come, like, you know, a couple days later, a couple weeks later, another picture with the ghostly image of a, like, and they show it to the person. It's like, "Oh, that's my mother. She who passed away." And they think that they're taking pictures of ghosts. And there's like and in one of the random science things, he writes a letter to Roentgen, I think is how you say his name, is the guy who discovered X-rays. And so he writes him a letter and says, could it be that science can finally, you know, see the light coming from the soul and stuff like that? But he never gets a reply back. But then it becomes clear that the other dude, the photography assistant dude, he's just faking it. You know, their little clue where it's like, oh, he was already in the shop before I came down in the morning. And then he comes and he sees that he's been robbed. And so John goes and he kills himself by jumping in the freezing river.
He also, though, did he actually get a picture taken of himself or just want to get it? Like, he wanted to believe it.
Yeah, he didn't believe it, but he wanted to believe it.
And that's another big hint of the theme of the book. But then he kills himself, and he's, you know, still a young man, even though he's a veteran and he's, you know, handicapped. And then it jumps 30 years ahead, and it's now Helena is a 60-year-old G-MILF, and she meets a... I think she's still living in England. And
she's a shopkeeper. She works... She literally works in the till.
And he and some paint famous artist guy is like, I must paint you. Here are my rules. You do what I say and you're naked. And she's like, fuck it. I'm old. I don't care. And then he paints her for a while. And they have conversations.
Until she starts painting and he realizes that she's better than him. And he leaves.
Yeah. He's, what is that shit you drew there? She's like, I don't fucking know. I just see if the brush worked. And he's like, I hate your guts. Goddamn bitch. I'm not taking my clothes off now. She's like, those weren't my rules. I forgot all about that. I read 59% of this book last night when I couldn't sleep because my wife was snoring so fucking loud. But she's pregnant, so I'm not allowed to say anything about it. And I forgot that detail. But there was stuff in there, like their conversations, like, why do you paint? What are you hoping to do? And at one point, she finds herself doodling on a piece of paper the face of John, who's been dead for 30 years. Like, it's like he's back from the dead.
And in the section, she also mentions that, you know, her daughter, Anne, is a doctor and has gone off to she's moved to the north of England to work in a hospital somewhere. And that they talk on the phone, and so she paints an orange, a painting of an orange, and then, boom, she's not in it anymore. And then it jumps forward in time again. So that was like 19, so the first was 1917, and then 1920, and then 1951, and now it's 1981. And these are not like super long 84. Chapters or anything. What? 54?
I think it's 84, I thought.
84. Oh, 1984, where... We were always at war with East Asia. No. where suddenly, brand new characters. There's Peter and his daughter, Mara. And you find out that Peter is Anne's wife and Mara is his daughter. And she's now grown and Anne is dead.
She's the daughter of Helena.
Yeah. So Mara is the granddaughter of Helena. So Anne is dead, and she died. Doesn't say exactly how, but you got the feeling it was because she went to a war zone to be, you know, help people, and then was killed there. And that she used to go off and do this. And now Mara is doing the same thing. She's a doctor, and she's going off to war zones to help people, you know, and do surgeries. And this is the part of the book where it's like, well, this part of the book is about Gaza, even though technically isn't, it's
vague enough that you could read into this whatever you'd like to about the Middle East. There's no sides, there's no politics at all, but it's the part that makes it topical enough for a panel of judges for a pretentious literary award.
It's whatever the reader thinks is the saddest one.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what war zone Mara was going off to in 1984. Was it Afghanistan?
Lebanon?
Lebanon, maybe.
Who the fuck knows?
Yep.
Was it just L.A. when we were kicking all sorts of ass at the Olympics?
It might not have specifically been like an actual war. You know, there's like conflict areas and like Doctors Without Borders shit that, you know, you go to places that bad things happen. That might not necessarily be a full war. Could be anything.
Did Liberia have its horrible war yet, or is that later in the 80s?
I think that was the 90s.
Was it? When they lined up the cabinet members and shot them? The coup there was outrageous. Okay. Well, either way, it's vague enough that you could see whatever you'd like to. Smart move, writer.
The Iran-Iraq war was going on at the time. That's actually was pretty brutal and a really big war. But anyway, it could have been many things. Doesn't say. All right. So in this chapter, she meets Alan, who's a photographer, who's a war photographer. But he comes back to Suffolk.
Yeah, Suffolk County, New York.
To live with her, because that's where her father is. And Peter is a hat maker. What's the word for that?
Haberdasher,
yeah. So he makes hats, and he's very sad and lonely, and he's always afraid when Mara goes off because, yeah, that would be fucking terrifying.
And basically, at the end of the chapter, she's like, "I'm going back one more time into the breach or whatever," and he's like, "You're speaking of breach, you are pregnant." She's like, "Yeah, but only like 4 months. That barely counts. That's just like a burrito still in there, you know." And he's like, "Oh, Jesus, fuck. All right." And then the dad and the husband or the boyfriend, whatever, there take her to the airport. And they're like, "Good luck. Okay. See you in one war." And then they go back and they lose all power. And they just sit in the dark. And this is where you meet Peter's random two friends who they're like the only part of the story I don't really understand. Sander and Marcus. He's like, "Hey, want to go in my house and drink?" He's like, "Oh, sounds pretty good. Oh, I got two other dudes sitting here, and there's no power, and they sit in the dark." And they're just two old guys. But those names appear in another story in one of the earlier ones. So I guess
but
we're
it can't
supposed
be the same people.
Well, are they supposed to be like really old men now? Because it's like 1984, and they appear in like the 19... I'm looking at the table of contents. I think they appear in like the 1912 story.
Yeah.
So they would if they're like 75-year-old men or 80-year-old men. I don't know.
I guess that's possible.
80-year-old men drink. My dad's working on it.
But also in this chapter, which is why this chapter feels like Gaza. This talks about Mara talks about, you know, working in a hospital and like operating on a child, and then the hospital is bombed and the child dies, you know, minutes later. And stuff like that, and a bunch of stories like that, and they're all very wistful. It's all very
the whole
sentimental.
Book is very wistful,
as it would be, but like the whole book is that way, not just this part about what I think is Gaza.
Is that? But I feel like sentimental is like old Yeller, like when you're like, look at how things used to be. This is more just like straight trying to hit you in the emotions. Like I'm going to hit you right in the feelings. Like that's the goal of some of those lines.
But without developing the characters very much, or having a much of a plot.
I think this is a book of theme, not so much of the plot. The plot is a product of the theme, as opposed to the way it's usually done. Their actions are not so important on their own. They're more just symptoms of how people deal with the theme of... I was going to say this to the end, but what is the purpose of life? Why are we alive?
Why is everyone sad all the time?
Well, just like, how do we deal with the certainty of death? That's the theme of the book. That's what I got from it. And that's a hard question. And so it just shows this question reverberate through a family over generations.
So then the book jumps from 1984... to 1910.
Straight over the shark, by the way, because this is when the book gets really confusing.
It jumps to 1910 in entirely different characters. Although you find out it's actually Peter's mother, who is, and they're in France, and they, her mother is.
They're going a part out called Rue Gaza. Did you notice that?
No.
It's a Rue Gazan. I don't know how you actually pronounce it, but it's G-A-Z-A. N.
It's a long pause.
Very long. I guess, like, Gaza for Nate's North? Theory, this is about Gaza and Israel. There's a part of it. Don't you rue what's happening in Gaza? Come on. This is not a book of accidents.
You know, I just edited the Pale Fire episode today, and like after that book, yeah, that would fit. It's the kind of clue would be in there.
Sorry.
So it jumps back to 1910, and it's a totally new character. You know, this woman named Leah, who is going out to gather firewood in the forest, and her husband has just died of an illness. Or just recently died of an illness, and she's going out, and she randomly runs into a photographer who is just taking pictures of the forest because he just wants to remember everything. He just wants to record everything. He just wants to, like, not just remember it, because he wants it, like, recorded in a fixed medium.
But it kind of, it seemed anachronistic that he's like, I just want to see how things used to be. I feel like no one had that attitude in 1908. They were like, the future, fuck the past. And then they just then burn a library of archives because, like, fuck that. We don't want those things anymore. Like, nobody was preserving shit in 1908. This guy was very forward thinking.
Speaking of the future, way back in the first chapter, John's mother dies in a Zeppelin attack.
John the Hindenburg?
No. I want to say a German Zeppelin flew over to England, at least according to this, and like bombed a random village, happened to be his mother. Anyway, that was just a thing that happened. So anyway, back in this chapter.
He felt a whole lot of love for
I was
his
trying to
mother.
Think of another one, yeah. Just
hey, what can I say?
I guess she saw the black dog.
Oh, it was the Grimm from Harry Potter?
He was dazed and confused after his mom died.
Two.
She met your maker.
She's now on a stairway to heaven.
Oh, come on. That's too easy. Do you think when the Germans sailed over there or flew over there, they were singing an immigrant song? No?
Probably.
I know she's Wagner. Entombed in
they
one
did
of
fly
the
over the hills and far away.
That's true. I'm trying to think of more now. God damn it. I can't do anything with cashmere. Just try to talk, Nate. I don't have one ready.
That'll help. Give you something to interrupt, and then you'll think of something new.
I do. I already have one. It's a real heartbreaker. Okay, sorry.
Okay, so she meets the photographer, and he's like, oh, I just want to, like, record everything because that's what I want to do, but not to, like, sell it. It's like he just wants to record it. Anyway, and then she thinks, you know what? I'm not so old I can't have a baby. And then she fucks him. And then she falls asleep. There's a lot of that in this book. And then wakes up and is like, why don't you come home? I'll make you dinner. And he's already gone. And he left her firewood and a photograph. It's like, okay, great. And she's like, I'll name it Peter after my husband, who turns out to be.
Yeah, somewhere in the family tree there.
Anne's husband later. Much later, in the 50s, long time. And then it goes to 1980 in Estonia with the world, totally new characters. It's like the first part of the book had like a connected through line part. And then the second half, or not second half, the last quarter just kind of didn't. Kind of annoyed me. And so this 1980 in Estonia, a dude with a really weird name. What's his name?
Pavo.
It's like
Nine, 19 A's in it.
Sees a woman named Sophia. And this is where I was like, okay, I really need to start highlighting some of these sentences. Where she said, where he sees Sophia and he says, she had a face that made Pavo believe in justice, that made him believe she could lead the charge from the ramparts singing. Like, okay. Come on.
See, that's just the, you know how like they're idioms of the language? In Estonia, that means she's really hot.
Because they don't have
a face
justice
that makes you believe in justice.
As a, you know, there's a face, you know, that can launch 1,000 ships. She's a face that can launch a handful of lawsuits. Like, oh, it's, you know, it's something. Could be profitable.
But wow, the book is like, I mean, like, okay, very yeah, pretentious. It's, where it's just kind of like trying to be deep, but trying too hard in a lot of places. That's what I felt.
When I try to go deep, I try to be hard too. But that's something different. I think it's worth noting that Anne Michaels is a poet. And yeah. So, primarily. So, that...
She's got a lot of poetry lines.
A lot of it. The word that came to mind is elegiac. How do you fucking pronounce that word? Elegiac, right?
Elegiac.
I don't
I don't think so.
You might.
That's how, that doesn't sound right.
You know, a hillbilly elegy.
I think there's like 5 ways to say it because nobody knows, so they all have to be. It's like nuclear. You just like, well, fuck it, we'll take that one too now.
No, that's the worst one.
You know what? It's the only one said by a president that a president coined. but yeah, it is flowery and definitely there are, especially every at the end of every chapter where she has to end on a line where you're like, oh, they always feel a little. Come on now. But I was actually thinking about that as we read this, because if she ended him differently, if the guy was like, and then he said, can you pass the butter? And she did. End of chapter. It would feel really out of place, too. Like, it, like the whole, the book is a little highfalutin, so it's got to do that. I mean, we were talking just most recently about how comedy books can't be taken seriously, you know? Like, if a comedy wrote in this kind of language, it would just, like, not work unless it was satirizing this kind of language. But, like, this is like a thing. Like, you have to write in a snobby kind of way to be taken seriously in a certain type of novel. I don't know if it's possible not to. Like, because if you wrote a novel thinking, like, what is the fucking purpose of life and we know we're going to die and we all have to deal with it and we never get an answer, but you wrote it in, like, Ernest Hemingway sentences. She died. I thought about it for a while. I sat down in a chair. It was made of wood. She was still dead. I had a scotch. Chapter 2. That would be fucking miserable. But this is where it kind of loses the thread. Then it goes to somewhere else, Nate. You'll remember.
So Pavo is in the musicians' union? No. Yes.
Communists have a union for everything.
And she gets, like, deported, and it's, like, there was a thing where it's, like, I knew this was coming, like, why? What's going on? She gets to Belarus? I don't mind, was she Russian? Anyway, so it didn't really explain it, and I was, like, whatever. Okay, this book is annoying me now. And then it goes to 1908, because, you know, and about somebody talking about...
Madame Palladino.
Rutherford, who... did a bunch of physics.
He did the is he the gold foil guy? I think so,
yeah.
I remember that from high school chemistry still. The only question I would ever get right on the test. Ernst Rutherford. And they're like, yes, very good. Now, how many carboxyl groups? Like, I fucking nothing.
Got don't know nothing. What that is.
And put it in mentions C. Pierre Curie briefly, and it does a bunch of science stuff. And then the next chapter is actually... about Marie Curie and how she's being like, she has to hide away because she's won her second Nobel Prize and everybody's mad at her. People think she stole her husband's work.
But well, you don't really make scientific discoveries in the kitchen, Nate. And that was kind of the thinking.
I mean, that was the joke, but that is the thinking.
Yeah. Like,
how could this lady, and let's be real, a Polish lady, how did she figure out anything? Come on. It's not, she didn't figure out like the pierogi element. Pierogium. she's an admirable figure in history, but come on, like there everyone was an asshole because pure sexism. No mystery here.
And I didn't know that she was that people hated her that much for this.
Well, they just hated women.
I was aware of that.
Actively melting from radiation poisoning. She was like melt man. She was just dripping.
It's like, oh, and she kept some radium in a jar by her bed. Well, what did you think was going to happen? Although they did not know the connection between radioactivity and cancer at the time. So that was a problem. And then...
Not so smart, are they? What are those two Nobel Prizes doing for you, huh? You didn't know holding the glowing rock was bad? I do. And then there's also somewhere in here an explanation, a fairly long passage about evolution.
Yeah.
I think those have a purpose, but like, I'll get to that in my theory of the book later.
And then there's a very short one-page chapter in 2010 with now this is Helen, who is the great-granddaughter of Helena and the daughter of Mara, and she's now an adult in missing, and she's also sad about someone dying. I forget who it was.
Everyone. Everyone's
probably
dead.
Probably her mom, but also, yeah, probably no father, something like that. Anyway, and then she the just, final...
Her chapter says almost nothing. And I don't know if I actually ever said a name. She's just like, why do we feel sad? Why does that always happen? I mean, she's wearing her dad's hat. So that's probably why. And then you get to the future, 2025, when we have flying cars.
And jetpacks. Yeah, and then I was thinking, like, is there any connection to any of the characters? There is a connection to... previous character where Amo, who is the son of Sophia, who was the one deported back to Belarus, some dude is like watching
Famo Amo. He makes
a woman named Anna in a cafe who he's really into, and apparently they were dating, but she's dumped him. But then I don't know, then it ends. That was the last chapter.
Yeah, that last one was weird.
It was like not, this last part of the book, the last quarter, like seemed to really not have any connection to anybody else.
It's splintered, for sure.
And then the final two lines, the snow falls, inventing its own silence. Oh, who can say what happens when we are remembered? The end.
There's that snow falling line. You could hear she types that. The snow falls, inventing its own silence. She went, oh, that's a good one. Like that is a obnoxious sentence. Just, yeah, I'm gonna sit in the closet today and just whiff those. The book suffered from that disease a lot. Loose poet anus. just the effluvium comes.
Couldn't
out.
Even hear the fart. It insists upon itself.
What happens to a fart when it is remembered?
Can you step into the same fart twice?
If you fart in the woods and no one's around to hear it, did it really happen?
Was it you? yeah, okay. So the book is short, so that doesn't get too fatiguing, but it's definitely a problem.
It gets a little fatiguing only in that it's really hard to like hang on and figure out what's going on at times. It's short, but it's just like, whew, where was I? Oh, I'm thrown into the abyss again at the next chapter. All right, good luck to me.
Well, what did you make of the book, Jimmy? Because you really, really hated it.
I don't know. I mean, it was definitely the most bookery book so far. It could be that I had just read three others and my brain was just pudding. But it was, you know, it was so much work to get anything out of it. Like, it was very nicely written. Of course, they all are. And she's a poet, so of course, you know, she's great at it. But, like... And it was going for, you know, incredible poignancy at all times. But sometimes it felt a little substanceless. I mean, I'm not a poetry person. I'm never going to be. I'll admit that. So telling the difference between, like, an incredibly good poem and an incredibly sappy poem are pretty hard for me if I don't, like, know who wrote it. I can tell
isn't
when
that,
the train
isn't
subway...
Isn't that true for professors, too? Like,
I mean, sometimes.
Haven't they done things like that where they've...
It's like, is this, which half of this banana is, you know, the same thing? It's the same shit.
It's the same banana, yeah.
I know that the poems in the New York City subways are terrible. Those are terrible. I know they're bad. But like with something like, we haven't done a Rupi Kaur book yet.
Ugh.
But, you know, she's supposed to be, I know, good for, you know, regular people, I guess.
She's good for Instagram.
Yeah, and you know, some of these feel like that, but maybe a little too heady for Instagram, but it's hard for me. I'm just really not a poetry person. And when it's something that's like, there's so little to go on other than like effervescent emotions, it's just, I struggle to give a shit.
I think that's the point of a lot of poetry, is to make you think of or feel a certain thing or picture a certain moment. They're not always meant to be narrative or,
yeah,
or even easy. Like, it's like, here's a thing. Like, understand. Like, whenever I've actually put some work into trying to understand poetry lately, and see someone like talk about a poem. They're like, do you notice how this word and this word is over here? And he breaks the line, or she does, you know, puts a new stanza here, and it's meant to jar you. And so, I mean, there, it is interesting. It's also really open for obnoxious, fake, pretentious shit. But I think it worked in this book for me, even though it was a little bit much at times. I think I actually really liked it. What do you think, Nate, of the writing style?
At first, I thought it was, I actually liked the book at first. But when it switched, when John dies and then it switches to something totally new, I was like, didn't like it as much anymore.
That's like chapter like two.
Chapter three.
Tell me.
It kind of like, if it was all kind of one story rather than disjointed stories, disconnected stories, could have been something I was into. But, and then by the second half of the book, I was like, man, this is very forced. And then I wasn't really into it anymore. But of course, maybe I'm just not smart enough to understand it.
I mean, poetry is just, it's so much more of a thing that's like, you either like it or you don't. Even more so than like just reading books.
Part of that is that in the last century, poetry, like the fact that rhyming is considered corny and meter is corny, the things that make classic poems easy to remember and kind of fun, it feels today like Dr. Seuss. But you go back and read something like I really like Casey at the Bat, you know, that poem. That's fucking super corny rhyme in meter, and it has like the rhythm of a old timey ballad or something. People that will put that in a poetry anthology because it's old. But if you wrote a poem like that today, they'd be like, "What the fuck is wrong with you? We don't do that." You need to write a poem entirely in feces, and it needs to be about apartheid, and never rhyme ever once.
And not mention apartheid.
But never say it. No, you have to do it through the analogy of tangerines and tangelos.
Separate, but not.
Tan. I know. I think modern poetry, a lot like modern classical music, has gotten so academic that it excludes the average reader or the average listener, you know? Like, no one, you can't appreciate it without a degree anymore. So it's kind of like modern, also modern jazz. Like, unless you're a player of it, you can't be like, oh, you hear how he's playing the same song, but like a fucking in the totally wrong key and the wrong time, and it sounds like dog shit, but that's smart somehow. Yeah, I'm loving it too. You know, like that kind of shit. I think this book rides that line. I think it's
definitely on the line.
But I think it comes out successfully. So you warned us, Jimmy, that the book made no sense. You were like, it's a book. It's like a waking up a sleeping bum and then asking him what his dream was about and then asking a different bum to remember that dream
later. Like if you were on acid and someone else had an acid dream and they described it to you, but you're still on acid when they describe it to you, and now I'm writing a book about it.
All right. It sounds like we're both poets, but I was like, I'm gonna understand the fuck out of this book. Jimmy's dumb. And so I read it very carefully.
I mean, it's one of those things where like you can read it and be like, I understand the plot points that are happening, but you're not getting the book, you know. Like, yes, he came back from the war. He is sad. He met a nice girl. They got married. He took pictures of ghosts. She became an old naked model. I got the plot points, but like, you don't, you know, that's not what the book is really. It's not what the book is meant to be.
I just, once I realized in chapter three, like, hey, this is like jumping around, and I looked at the table of contents. These dates aren't coming back. Like, we're not returning to them.
Yeah.
There must be something bigger than the story. There must be something else connecting them.
I know it's like 80% like one family through generations and then a few randos.
Yeah. And I bet if you read it really carefully, the randos have some sort of connection too, more so than just they talk about the same topic.
Got to be some reason they're in there.
I the thing that stuck out to me, and this is what I think the book was about. Now, it could be, like, if you asked Anne Michael, she'd be like, that's so fucking painfully obvious. That's, of course, not what I meant. Like, anytime I think I get it, I'm like, I always wonder, maybe that's it. That they're like, no, that was like the fake thing I put to fucking trick dummies. You know, so before I start thinking that, I've really cracked the case open. But there's so much about the dead and talking to the dead and understanding what happens when you're dead and how are you remembered. And how, why did, even in those weird science-y chapters.
Where John is wondering if he can use science to see the soul.
The evolution of perception and why, you know, how did that happen? almost. And then the fact that people are willing to trick and lie to each other because there's the guy with the fake pictures. But then at the end of the book, that Paladino woman was a real person. I read about her, I think in like the Amazing Randy book or something. Like, she was one of those people in the 1890s that they would have seances and the table would float and then there was all just like fucking basic magic tricks. Like, how desperate we are to know what happens after you die. How that is a universal human thing in that everybody has to deal with it. We have to deal with death. We have to, we want to know what happens. We want. And in the 20th century, maybe that's why she picked only these times, is when people tried to explore it in different ways besides just religion, besides just faith. That's what I got out of the book. And it was just interesting to say.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. I still didn't like reading it, though.
Yeah, kind of the same. Like, yeah, it was... It was, but no, I think you're right. That I think that makes sense.
Tell me I'm wrong, by the way. I don't mind being wrong on this.
It feels like it's one of those things like, oh, this has got a lot of meaning to it.
Is it meaning or questioning?
The meaning is the question. You know, you know what I mean?
She's not telling me to
answer the question because, you know, you can't answer that question. And I guess maybe that's the point, but.
Maybe, yeah, exactly. Maybe that is the point, right? Like, we as a species, as a creature, because it gets into evolution there, we as this product, we want to know. We cannot know.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the first fucking line?
And the last line is about what we're remembered by, you know, which is the opening line is chapter one, I believe. I don't remember what the
what's the connection?
Was. Now, what's the title about? That I don't know. That I thought about a lot. Because when I was like, I think I figured this out. And I was like, well, why is it called held? Like, oh, fuck.
Because they held on to life.
And maybe, or it's what we hold on to of the people after they're gone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that is certainly a common, not idea, but like a thought is like, you know, people are never really dead if you're remembered. Because they live on through that.
Yes. That reminds me of the Groucho Marx quote, like, I don't want to achieve immortality through my work. I want to achieve it by not dying.
And now he's dead.
Yeah, he's been dead for a long time. Probably longer than he was alive. He's been dead.
Almost everyone has been.
If you count the time before he was born. Yeah. So it's a heavy topic, but it's a universal thing. So that makes it have appeal and potentially even evergreen kind of appeal because you could read the book 10 years from now and not be like, oh, that
don't
was a
die.
Book. I hate you. not, you know, as opposed to like, oh, that was a really interesting book about, you know, what it was like to live during the Trump years or something like that. Whereas years later, you only read that if you're interested in history.
So, okay, is this book going to win the Booker?
I have no fucking idea.
It obviously depends on what the other books are. We've now read, this is our fourth one. There are still nine more? Eight more?
Oh,
nine,
Jesus
nine
more. Christ.
Yeah.
Which is a lot. I'm thinking of the four we've read, okay, will it be picked up? Will it make it to the short list? I would say this definitely has a chance of making it to the short list. I would say it even, I don't want it to win though, because I thought it did, it just wasn't enough.
You know, of the ones that have won, like even if we didn't love them or like think that they were like the best, we would generally be like, yeah, I could see why that won, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to go back and look now.
This would be a very short Booker winner. It's almost like not enough book. Not that I wanted it to be longer, but...
It also doesn't have a great cause other than universal human suffering, which is not as trendy.
It's not specific enough.
Yeah. That's too universal.
But it's got a little bit in there. Enough to, I think enough to get it to the short list. I don't know if it's enough to get it over the line, though, for the win.
It's not impossible. I think it'll probably make the short list, but that's only we read less than half of them, so who the fuck knows? But I think of the ones we've read so far, this is the most likely.
And I wouldn't be upset if it won. I'd be pissed off if fucking Wild Houses or the fucking Orbital won. Oh my god,
they won't.
This is better.
James
than
may win just be, but like I feel like James has already kind of passed that moment too. But and that book was like Huckleberry Finn fan fiction, so I don't know.
Got nine more to go.
That's true. Oh, last year we fucking got all the shortlist wrong. So.
Well, we were only basing it on gamblers. So this year we're going based on book length.
It's just as scientific a process.
Well, it's a non-scientific process, so all we can do is guess.
And maybe we should periodically return to this question, but of the books we've read, would you actually recommend any of them? Like, would you recommend this book to anybody or any of the other ones? Or would you just be like,
Not really. It's not a necessary book.
If someone really loved Huck Finn, I'd say, well, have I got a pick for you?
yeah, and it'd be Tom Sawyer. Yeah, I realize that now. Like, most of the Booker's exciting for the year, but after a couple of years, you forget all of them.
I actually have recommended books in the past of the ones we like that didn't win. And I'm batting 100 on... No, I'm batting 1,000. Ooh, 100 is terrible. I'm batting 1,000 on people liking those books, like really liking them.
Was it that Maps of Our Bodies, or that one you liked?
That one I recommended to two people. Overstory and Lincoln and the Bardo.
Yeah, but... all right, so the Overstory was the Pulitzer.
Yeah.
Lincoln and the Bardo won... 8 years ago or something like that. Like, when did that win? 2018 or something like that?
Six, seven, yeah.
So that's old. So if like one out of the last seven Booker winners, you're like, this one's really good.
Yeah, it's not frequent.
But they're fun for the season. And if you're a book nerd, it's kind of what you do. Because, you know, I mean, I guess you could conceivably just spend all your time and work your way through all of the classics. You know, you could read every Dickens book and every...
Oh, fuck that.
Thomas Hardy novel and all.
They've all been bad. Like, every classic, maybe not quite, but most of them have not been fun to read.
Yeah, they sometimes have moments that are great, but they're usually kind of a chore. There's very few that are fun. But then trying to pick new releases, that's a complete crapshoot. At least the Booker gives you a filter where they're like, this one, at least a bunch of people who are supposedly smart liked it. I don't know if it's better than... I think that'd be smart. Next year, we should do this. On Goodreads, there's always a fan-made or, you know, person-made list of new releases that are eligible for the Booker. And then they have it sorted by reviews. And we should look at that the day before they announced the Booker list and see how close they got and compare and see if any of those ones that didn't make it, if there were any good.
Well, I mean, two of the ones on this list haven't been released yet.
Yeah, that's another problem with the Booker. They have some sort of weird rule about that where you know, I remember the first year or maybe the second year I tried to read all of them. One book didn't come out until like January the next year. So I'm like, well, that's definitely not winning. But it's, you couldn't even read them all ahead of time.
I know at like film festivals, when they screen films for the first time, sometimes they're like really not finished. Like, or I mean, they're not all finished with post-production. They don't all have all their sound effects, music, you know, stuff like that. So I feel like the booker will also get manuscripts.
They get the manuscripts and they're like, here's the manuscript. It's not done yet. Don't worry. I'm going to take out all the quotation marks before I publish. So don't judge
this book used single quotation marks, actually.
I've seen that in a lot of like old books, I feel like, or like British shit sometimes. So I've seen that before.
I feel like this was, you know, going halfway between quotation marks and no quotation marks.
What well, the author's think? Canadian. She's not going to be single. That bold.
It's quotation marks training wheels.
So I guess the idea that Cormac McCarthy didn't want to clutter the page, which is fucking stupid. I hate that guy.
When he was the only one doing it, it'd be like, okay, that's his thing. I get it. But then now it's like, you're not allowed to have them and be considered fine art.
Did any of the other ones have it? I'm going to have to go back and look through the books.
James had quotation marks.
All right.
Pretty well, sure.
That's a new metric. Let's see. When's the last... I'll look this up later. When was the last time a book with quotation marks won the book?
Get real into okay. The deep stats.
Wild Houses had single.
Orwell didn't have any, I don't think.
Didn't have anything. The worst.
Didn't have anything in it.
All right. We're gonna this will be a new theory. We could add this
to the new thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, well, if you use quotation marks, why don't you send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter, drunkguysbc.
Or go to Facebook and Instagram at drunkguysbookclub.
Or support the podcast over at patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub. Before you die, you should go there.
And go to drunkguysbookclub@goodreads, where we are in a club
that may or may not see ghosts.
Ghosts!
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.